Welcome back to another episode of Room With A Review. I'm David, the host, creator of this podcast, and going to mix it up a little bit with where I thought I was going. Again, you guys don't know where I'm going with this, what's going to come next. Occasionally I will tease something I've got in mind or give a suggestion like I did with the Bond ones that dropped the other day. The film, I am going to do a couple of films though in the next few weeks. That's what I've been consuming the most. There'll be a book in there somewhere. I'll keep looking for some other texts. Maybe TV show. Not sure about that. I'll have to think about it. But yeah, it's going to be quite a few films in the next several episodes. But this one is a film, just not fictional. It is a documentary called Free Solo. This documentary came to my attention, I think it was last year. I think the movie came out in 2018, but it came out in 2018. And anyway, it came to my attention, I should say, last year. I think it was through the Rooster Teeth podcast. They were talking about it. But basically, what it is a documentary, as I already said. Yeah, it came out in 2018. Documentary about a guy called Alex Honnold, who basically, what he does, he rock climbs, but without harness, rope, any of that kind of equipment. It's completely freehand. So it's called a free solo climb. And he's basically climbing a very, very large cliff face called El Capitan, which is in Yellowstone. And it basically is just documenting his journey to try and achieve it. And it's very, very, it is a very good documentary. I think it's probably one of the most well-made documentaries I've watched in terms of a full film. Obviously, there's some really good TV or episode-based documentaries that have come out. A lot of murder type ones, and Making Murder is good, but it's not the top level. The Jinx is phenomenal. ESPN's 30 for 30s are usually pretty good. We've also had things like March of the Penguins, which is okay. Blackfish, which is fine. Again, a couple of issues with each of those. So yeah, this one was pretty interesting. It's only about 90 minutes long, so it's not long to watch, very quick to watch, which I think helped too. But it's fascinating, and I didn't realize how engaged with it I was until it got to the ending. So all the way through, we see him kind of training and practicing his climbing techniques and different things. We look at his personal life. We meet some of the other climbers he climbs with. We meet his girlfriend and the impact she has on him and whether or not she's a distraction or not, which is something they get into, as well as his sometimes what appears to be a lack of caring for her, although I think they get into that pretty well and kind of explain his rationale behind it all. That the moment he starts to have any kind of distractions when he's puts himself in a lot of danger. So it's an interesting mindset that he's got. But they go to this rock in Morocco or Tunisia, one of the two, and they practice climbing on that, him and his friend, who's basically advising him. And then they do a couple of practice attempts going up El Capitan, which is the rock he's trying to climb freehand. And yeah, he does fairly well. But then on a couple of climbs, he injures himself once or twice, and then he attempts it and he bails, and you start to wonder, you know, where's this going? Is he going to do it? Or what's it going to take for him to get there? And then about halfway through, they start really getting more into the deaths of free climbers, including one guy who the main climber we're focusing on, Alex, was friendly with. There's photos of them kind of climbing together, which makes it a little bit more difficult. And that's when the girlfriend also starts to get involved and speak up a little bit more, or at least made to appear that way, which is pretty interesting. And then kind of the last 15 to 20 minutes, I don't want to give too much away, but I mean, it's a documentary, so it's not like you may have not heard this in the news. It's real events. We see his attempt to climb it once more. And it's during that last 15 minutes, I didn't realize how intense I felt about it, how well it's worked you up to become part of that. But what's equally as fascinating about the whole process is the camera crew that's documenting it all. They become part of the documentary themselves, and this is one of the reasons why I'd heard about it, but I feel like it was maybe overemphasized how much of a role they appeared in the documentary. But they interview themselves a little bit and they talk about their own process behind making it, which I think is fascinating. Although I do wish they'd actually spent longer on it. I think they could do a really good extra 20 minutes post the climb debriefing and talking about what they felt, because I think that was something that was maybe lacking, although Where the Documentary was great. But I'd like to see more interviews from them, and I'm sure they're out there. I just haven't looked them up. And I think they worked on 60 Minutes in the US and National Geographic, so maybe in one of those places you might find them. But on top of that, these filmmakers, they are not only really good filmmakers, like nature documenters and stuff, but also very good climbers themselves, because they've done a few climbs with Alex and they have to know how to climb but also get out of the way in order to get the best shots. And so that's fascinating on its own, and I think you can make a great documentary about the film crew and their kind of experiences, as I kind of touched upon just before. But they also talk about, on his first attempt to go up El Capitan freehand, how they didn't want to put any pressure on him, because if there was pressure on him, it would kind of cloud Alex's judgment. They didn't want to bias him. They didn't want to obstruct him in any way. They didn't want him being distracted in any way. So their setup then has to change a little bit. They really have to work on what they're going to be able to do and just be ready to film when he decides to do it, which I think is pretty interesting on its own. Just their, as I said, like I can come back to it, but their approach towards this. And it's a good, really psychological look at this figure and what he does, as well as just how it all works together. So overall, it's a very, very interesting documentary. As I said, not very long. But it would definitely be up there among the best documentaries I've seen as a full-length film. I'm trying to think of others that would be in that, at that level, and none are coming to mind. I'm sure there's some that I'm just forgetting that I can't think of right now, but it really is just a really good documentary. So definitely worth watching if you ever get the chance to. But I think it's a good text for teaching as well. And I think you could go so many different ways with it, because it's not really violent. It's not really, doesn't have much swearing or sex scenes, basically. Anything from about year 9 and up, I think it would be fine with. I think it's only PG. It could be M, so maybe year 10, you know, or maybe year 9, depending if permission or things like that. But yeah, I think year 9, 10, 11, I think, I know some people do documentary with year 11 in Contemporary Possibilities as part of what they study. Being a short one, you could definitely do that. It would lead in well to anyone that does Wasteland, I think, in terms of the interest level. I think the documentary process, I think, is quite worthwhile watching. So I think there's definitely a place for it. But as I said, you can go so many different ways with it. I think even if you taught visual arts, you could do it. I think it could be definitely a good student choice of a text they wanted to focus on and analyze. I think in many ways it goes really well if you want to go down the tragedy line of all these deaths that kind of come up, and kind of personal sacrifice or development, with things like After the Storm, which is one of those interactive documentaries. I think there are, as I said, there's so many different ways you could go with it. I think there's, in the English studies, the sport topic module you could do. I think it would fit under that really well. But there are a couple of other topics it could easily fit in just as well there. I think it could also really balance out well with movies like Chef, which is made in that documentary style and the social media aspects of it. But I think especially just the self-aware documentary team explaining their process, I think is really good for students too, to talk about bias and subjective views and things like that about any kind of filmmaking process, but particularly documentaries. And I think on top of that, also, you could talk about lots of the shots that are done. If you're really into your photography and cinematography, this would be a great text to talk about, because it's got some really spectacular shots. And just the way they use the camera to get some of these things, I could see this have been one of those
kind of sliding mirrors, doors, whatever the movie was called, alternative ways my life went down is kind of this kind of camera work stuff. I had friends of mine that we used to do this, not this level, but he was really good at the editing and effects and the post side of it. And I was better at the during and the capturing and knowing what shot, envisaging it. We made a pretty good team, I feel. But he was definitely the editor and I was more the pre side of it. So between us, we had a pretty good combination. But it's just, yeah, anyone that really finds photography fascinating, I think you could watch this and get a lot out of it. The music alone, also, you could do a lot with. There's some great uses of music, especially to just heighten the emotions. And there are good sections where there's minimal dialogue, or just not dialogue, but any kind of talking. And the music just captures everything you want it to be. It's so well done, the music, that it adds to the documentary. And yet, despite all their attempts not to bias the subject of it, the film crew and the producers of this still have their obvious biases. And that's where I really think a lot of this wonder of the documentary would be gotten. I think that's where a lot of people should go with it, is looking at the text itself and the bias. Where that fits in with other things you may teach would be interesting. You could make a case, depending on how your units are aligned or what your topics are aligned, with things like To Kill a Mockingbird. If you wanted to do something about bias, subjective, and empathy, I think there's ways down there. You could do it with a couple of different TV shows. You could do it with potentially, maybe, I don't know enough about it, but the geography syllabus, about humans interacting with their environments and things like that. I just think it's there's so many different ways you could go with it, and each to their own would take something else out of it. And I think it's one of those texts that I feel like sometimes it is good just for students just to consume stuff and not necessarily analyze it, but each kind of, they wouldn't have to analyze it, I think, but could write their own personal statement about it, what it made them feel, or what would be a fascinating question they'd like to ask, or anything like that. And I think this is one of those texts that I would just like to show students, just to build them up in their awareness or just their emotional capabilities. And I think that's, sometimes we've just got to acknowledge that texts are just worth consuming for the sake of them, and we need to let them sit with us without being forced to kind of work, because when we do that, I think we lose some of the beauty of it. If students kind of go, this is, oh, we're being forced to do this, I'm not enjoying it as much. Sometimes they really love it. Sometimes they do love these new texts and they're happy to explore them further. But for a lot of students, they don't. And I think for all people, you know, this is why texts are so important and why I started this podcast, I think, is because it's about the beauty of some of these texts that it's like water, or sand, it's water. The more you try to squeeze it, the more you force it out of your own grip, and you just kind of have to let it sit there. And I think that's what this text is. It's one of those sort of texts that there are so many different things you can take away from it, but each person will take a different thing and come at it from a different angle, that we can't, the more we try to do too much with it, we kind of ruin it in many ways. And that's where I think just going down that bias angle, but working it in to lead into other conversations about other texts is the best way to go. I don't know. That's a little bit of a tangent, I guess, but it's what I really feel about this text. And I think it's what I advise, what I would advise, and what I would like to do with it, I think. And that's, again, what I say this podcast is for. So without going further on about that, Free Solo, but by all means do watch it. I will be back in just a second with Ad of the Week and then War and Peace. Ad of the Week this week is Optus ad, but I want to talk about it for a couple of reasons, mainly because of the situation we're all in at the moment, middle of or early, end of the first third of 2020, COVID and everything like that's going on there. But this Optus ad I want to talk about, it's basically an ad for Donate Your Data, which when I first saw it, I thought this is a great initiative. I thought this is a wonderful thing. And this came out a couple months ago, maybe even last year. But I thought, this is a great thing. I mean, I never use my data on my phone plan.
And basically what this plan is you can use the data you, or give the data you don't use, donate it, and people that don't have their own internet access or lack internet access, they can then use your data. It gets donated to them, and it gets donated to students in particular, which obviously I am quite biased towards, but I think that would be a great use of my extra data. And at the moment, it's what has happened. I think they've really done a good drive of donate your data. People that are sitting at home on Wi-Fi, they're not using their data at all. And I think anyone that can and wants to should do this. I think you can only do it if you're Optus. So I'm not trying to plug them, but I do think it's a great initiative. And I'm maybe Telstra have something else that's similar I'm not aware of, or other suppliers like Vodafone and things like that. But it's fantastic that they figured out a way to do this. I really like it. So yeah, you end up paying for it, but you end up paying for someone else's data to use. But it's really good, I think, as a concept, because yeah, you just are really helping out people that need it at the moment, especially with everyone having to be online learning. Then, you know, just it makes them able to do that. But I'm not trying to advertise Optus. I'm not trying to say join them. I'm just saying donate your data if you can. Instead, what I want to talk about, this ad, it starts off, and the first time I ever saw this ad, I've seen it a couple times, I thought it was what's his name? I went completely blank. The guy that did Spirited Away and The Grave of the Fireflies and Howl's Moving Castle and Princess Mononoke. Far out. Anyway, him, that guy, the one I'm talking about, it looked like it was a new product coming from him, them, that group. I'm going to look it up because this is bugging me. I should know this. Yeah, so it's got that kind of animation style. It's got kind of creatures that looked like something out of it. So, you know, I thought, oh, okay, what's this? Some little animated little thing. Miyazaki. Hayao Miyazaki. That's the one. Studio Ghibli. That's the one I'm thinking of. Studio Ghibli. This is what I'm thinking about. Anyway, so it's got that kind of animation style to start. And some people like it, some people don't. That's fine. And I was like, oh, this is kind of cute. It reminded me, at first I thought it was a Commonwealth Bank, thinking it was like the Dolomites, and then they had those kids that were in some ads for a little while. I thought it was that. And I was like, oh, okay, yep, cool. Commonwealth Bank doing an ad for kids. Like, yep, fair enough. Get that starter account going. No problem. Because I saw this ad, I think it was last year. So it was before any of this kind of current need for donating data. So I thought, oh, yeah, Commonwealth Bank doing this. No, and then we get this guy, all his friends fly off with these weird backpack jetpack things. His doesn't load, so he can't fly off with them. But then these other creatures, they're able to give him a bit of a boost, and he's able to fly off. And so it's then that concept of, oh, donate your to help other people that need it. It's a cute little thing. I think it's a little bit odd in that's how it's done. I feel like they really could have gone a much more emotional ad. Maybe that would have made people feel guilty for not donating. It is a nice ad, but it didn't completely sell me on it. But I think airing the ad now is perfect timing, because it's not so emotional that we're going to be further hard hit in our current state. But we're also not guilted, and we're also quite happy about it. We go, oh yeah, I'm not using my data, I'll do that. I think it's perfect timing for them to release this ad right now. So good on that ad. But as I said, I feel like it could have gone more emotional, and in hindsight, it's probably best that it didn't. But at the time, it was like, well, why not? It's fine. It's a little cartoony, cute little ad, but nothing special. So I guess that's what I would say about this ad. Again, it's one of those ones where if you get the right setting and situation for an ad to come out, perfect. I talked about some of those hiring ads a couple of weeks ago and how it was like just really poorly timed that they couldn't have pulled their ads, but it is what it is. So yeah, I think it's a nice little ad, very simple, straightforward. So it's not hugely effective, but as I said, at this point in time, their choice of style worked out to be more effective than what it otherwise could have been. So just a little food for thought there. But yeah, do donate your data if you can and are willing to. And now to wrap up, War and Peace. And finally, as always, War and Peace, continuing to progress through. I said in the James Bond podcast the other day that I had fallen a little bit behind where I wanted to be. I've pretty much caught back up. I'm maybe, I think, a chapter out from where I'm going to be, or where I should have been. So over the next couple of days, I'll just read ahead again just to keep myself moving. I am finding that the more I read it, the time it is, the better. So maybe I need to up it to 2 chapters a day. It's just some days I don't do it at all, which makes that then a lot to catch up on in a week. So maybe I just need to up it overall for the week and do it instead of 7 chapters a week on average, up it to like 10 or 12. And then when I have those chances to read it for more longer periods of time. But I don't like taking a few days off from it because then I kind of lose my place a little bit. It's easier, trust me, it is easier to keep reading this book bit by bit. Unless you're kind of the person that can just sit and read through it nonstop, smash it out. Because I can do that with some books. There's another book I'm reading at the moment, but it's not this one. It is too dense. So, I don't know. I'll have to consider my approach going forward. I'm finding it a couple of chapters at a time is good, but not reading every day is worse. So I need to read every day, minimum chapter a day, as much as possible. Okay, got it. Glad you're here to share that moment with me. But yeah, it's getting a lot better. We're starting to see some of these main characters develop their new relationships. That's going to obviously take the next arc. I think we're moving into what is the second act or just about there. That being said, having not read the whole thing, I don't know where that's all going to fall. Nothing has really jumped out of me in the last couple of chapters. There was one little bit that was about how men and women view each other in their own marriages and how men, I mean, again, a lot of this stuff is very outdated, but men like obedient, placid women, women like men that think they're smart but still rely on their women. I found that fascinating. I think it's more about the nature of relationships. I think you've often got people that like to think they're smart in every relationship and then others where they've got that, they know they're not as, maybe they know they're smart in a different way and then they know that they kind of make up the flaws of the other person, and it, all in all, it kind of is a nice combination of the two, that the strengths and weaknesses, there's a really good saying for this that I've gone blank on, but they kind of just align perfectly. I think that's pretty common in a lot of relationships, and I think it's good where you've got maybe someone that's a lot more headstrong, impulsive, then you've got someone that's a little bit more reserved and patient, and I think that's often quite good as long as they're prepared for that. Sometimes you need people that are very similar because that's the kind of personality that they've got. So I think it's just an interesting exploration and expose on relationships in general, but nothing great has jumped out at me like some of these other ones. The one that still sticks with me is one of those early ones, The Machinery of Conversation, just perfect. I'm still waiting for a moment to use it in conversation or in analyses of something, but I think it's one that I really did like from the book. So yeah, I'll head on with it, I guess, with my newfound resolve to read multiple chapters as much as possible, minimum chapter a day, I guess. But thanks everyone for tuning in. Yeah, it shouldn't be a big gap like there was before the Bond one, but it also won't be a small gap like there was between that one and this one. So thanks for listening. If you are listening, please can do share it with anyone that you think would be interesting, especially if they've seen these texts, get their views on it. That would be great. As always, you can find me on Twitter at edudaveshin, but that is it for another week. I'll be back next week with another podcast. Thank you and goodbye.